Hello there, and welcome to this week's episode of the Total Water Polo Podcast. We've got a very special guest joining us from Canada today. It's none other than Nicholas Constantine Bakari, a great player, a great personality, and I can't wait to chat with him. Just before we start, as you guys will know, we do have a Patreon account. If you want to support us financially, I will leave the link in the show notes. I won't bore you on that. If you can continue to like, subscribe to this podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of our social media channels, it helps us grow and bring better content to you. But moving on now, straight into the chat with Nicholas, who's been waiting patiently. Nicholas, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
I'm really good. Thank you for having me. And congratulations for you, what you guys have been doing for their sport. It's really nice.
Thank you. No, we appreciate that a lot. Now, we've got a lot to talk about, but I just want to start off with something slightly weird. Your name is a very exotic name. It's maybe not a typical Canadian. So maybe if you can tell us like your name, your background, where does this come from?
Yeah. So basically Constantine Bakari. It's half Greek. So Constantine is Greek, my grandfather on my mother's side. And then Bakari is Italian on my dad's side. And then it's basically both my grandfathers, they immigrate here in Canada. They found their wife here. And then, so I'm the third generation of, so I'm 25% Greek, 25% Italian, then 50% French Canadian. But I consider myself like basically fully Canadian.
Yeah, well, maybe you're always destined to be a top player then with that sort of Greek, Italian kind of heritage. I mean, they're obviously Mediterranean countries and you've sort of ended up in snowy, cold Canada. But anyway, we won't dwell on that too much, but it's interesting. Let's talk about your journey in water polo and starting off. From what I understand, your brother and I think you've got like a million cousins, right? Who all played? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It's basically, this is how I started water polo. My aunt was the director of a pool here in Montreal. So basically, all the siblings, my mom and her sisters and brothers, they all put their kids into aquatic sports. So we basically all went swimming, diving in water polo, and then suddenly we all continue in water polo and we stop the other sports. So that's the way it went. And then after, let's say there's me, my cousin Matt, who made the junior team as well, the national team, and then he stopped, but I'm the one who kind of pursued that passion to the other level.
Mm. So you obviously have a bit of history with sort of aquatic sports. Canada's kind of more known for its, you know, maybe ice hockey or something like or basketball or maybe. So what's it like for kids who maybe aren't in your situation? How is it for them to get into water polo in Canada? Is it easy for them? Is it accessible?
I think that's one of the struggle where we have here in Canada is actually to compete against all these sports that me personally even love to follow. Like I follow NBA and NHL and NFL a lot. And but I think it's just, it comes with friendship. And then you're just like, I think a lot of kids, they learn how to swim, and then if they're around water enough, they see water polo and they're like, okay, let's try it. And then you get into the channel of water polo, and then suddenly you make the Quebec team without really realizing, and then you make the junior team, and then you make this, like you go towards that path. But yeah, I think it's really, this is one of our biggest challenge is to bring youth and kids into the pools. And I think we have some challenges in Canada to do it in terms of the climate. I think water polo is a summer sport. So much better to play water polo in the sun outside during the summer. And also, you know, for their leagues to have a good competition level, I think it's hard that Canada is so spread around. So it's kind of the leagues are really small leagues. It's just, I guess, a small world sports here in Canada.
Yeah. For those that sort of don't really understand them or know about the league in Canada, I'm talking senior leagues and maybe like under 18s and obviously the seniors. What's the climate like there? Is it a strong league given that it's probably not so professional or does it need a lot of work?
I wouldn't say it's professional. I think it it's clubs that people are paying to play and to train and to be part of the league. And also, you know, there's always the provincial, the states leagues. And yeah. Then after, there's the national championship that's like once a year. We're trying to improve it, especially we're trying to work on building a better pyramid for our program. But everything that's professional or elite, it comes with Water Polo Canada. So everything with national team, this is when you enter like more professional environment of training. This is why we have the centralization and the center here in Montreal. So all the best athletes, let's say, that are 17, 18 in the country, we bring them here and we offer them at the Institute of Sport actually a professional environment so they can develop and maybe reach some of the European levels.
You talk about that center of excellence. Did you have that when you were 17, 18? I mean, I want to talk about you personally now. You've obviously had a fascinating career, but I just want to know how it sort of started before you kind of got to Europe and went to Europe.
I think it was a mix of a lot of things that went in my baggage as a player. But basically, I think it's really important in Canada. In order to succeed, you got to be quite talented when you're young. So I got fortunate to be good at water polo young, but my physical abilities were not at the level of other athletes, but I had the potential of becoming a good athlete in water polo. So I just got invited into the junior team in 2008. And when the senior team went to Olympics, that's the last time we qualified. And the senior team were a lot more mature. So it gave me an idea of where I could end up. And then after in 2009, the year right after, the main center of Canada, Nathaniel Miller, got injured his elbow. And then the federation and the coach decided to pick me instead of somebody that's a little bit older because of my future potential. And they brought me to Rome 2009, my first World Championship senior. And that kind of opened up my eyes. Like, that was crazy for me just to be there in Rome, surrounded by all the players that I could see on maybe YouTube or something like this. So it kind of gave me that spark of like, okay, if I work really hard, maybe I can make it to this level, you know? I will always remember that final Serbia-Spain in Rome. It was amazing, you know, just the atmosphere, the energy behind the sport and everything was amazing.
Quite fortunate for you to make that team. And I think that's actually to date still the best ever finish at the World Champs. I think you finished in top eight, if I'm not mistaken, which is not an easy thing to do anymore with so many good teams on the scene. I'm about to expose how little maybe I know about Canada, but it sort of seems from the outside that maybe the women have slightly more opportunities than the men. Would you say that's fair? You know, I think a lot of the women travel down to America and go to college. A lot of the men doing that as well?
I mean now, yeah, for sure. The girls, they have a good exposure in the NCAA, and now we're open. We're sending a lot more athletes into the NCAA. I think now we have like five players actually playing there in the United States. That we kind of believe in that format as well for us, because it's kind of guaranteeing our players to stay involved in water polo 4 years. Then after, they can go play in Europe, and then we keep them longer in the system. You know what I mean? Because that's been the hardest thing as a Canadian federation, is to keep our athletes. Let's say, for example, my group, my generation 91, that was quite good. When we didn't qualify to the Olympics in 2016, it kind of played domino, you know, because everybody finished their degree and they wanted to move on and actually try to earn some money into their fields and then, you know, like settle down into their other life of sport. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the thing. The opportunities, if you don't play pro at a really high level, the opportunities to actually have a good living, it's getting harder and harder. This is why we're trying to change the culture a little bit of, oh, you can go to NCAA, you can find your own path NCAA, then after, if you have your degree, then after you can go play pro, or even if you're at this level, you can be home, like maybe Australia do, that you can work and then still
do the national team.
We'll come back to that maybe slightly later, but obviously you mentioned there about playing in Europe, and you obviously did go and do that. And I mean, your resume is incredibly impressive. The scale of the teams that you played for, Jug, Brescia, and Ferencvaros, you know, three, you know, giants. Can we sort of go through how those sort of transfers came about?
Basically, my career went like this. It was 2 years in Calgary. So after this World Championship 2009, I went to Calgary. It was like basically centralization and development center. We had only two players at the time in Europe just to really build our team. And then I grew up there. When I was 19, I signed in Marseille. I spent 5 years there. So it was amazing. I felt like at home after moving, because I speak French. I learned English when I moved to Calgary. And then after 2 years in Calgary of training extremely hard, I signed my first contract in Marseille. So it felt even easier for me to move to Marseille in terms of language and then just like culture and stuff like this. And then after I did sign in Jug, and I had the opportunity to work with Nikša Dobud and Miles Malaka, which is for me two really masterpiece in terms of center position. So I think I learned, I grew up a lot understanding the game and everything, all the technical movements of the Croatian systems and stuff like this. So I think that was a big step up, and it was a challenge for me to actually go in Dubrovnik and adapt to this culture and this language. And then after I moved on, I went to Australia as well. I did a sixth season there. I absolutely loved it. And then after I signed, let's say my biggest contracts in terms of sport, I signed in Ferencváros 2 years, and then I finished my professional career in Brescia. When I say finish, is because I don't really know now. I'm based in Montreal.
Yeah,
I'm trying new things in my life, and I'm involved in coaching and doing a transition, and I wanted to be based home and give back to the federation. But it's basically how it went, and these 3 years was amazing too. The work that these clubs are putting in their athletes, their organization, how professional they are, how they lead their team, it's incredible, and it was a blessing for me to be part of these clubs.
So maybe the door's slightly ajar. It's not totally shut in terms of maybe a return to Europe.
No, it's not. The door is not shut. It's just now I wanted to. The reason why I came back, it's not because of the lack of level. I think I demonstrated this summer at this World Championship in Japan. I still have the level that I have, but it's just I wanted a more complete life in terms of not going all in into water polo, and I wanted to have a little bit more balance and spending time with people I really care about, and looking for the what's next transition or opportunities, and be based at home and give back to the Canadian Federation, who are always at my back.
What was the hardest thing about playing abroad?
For me, it's there's two things that I think are really challenging as a foreigner. So basically, there's always the feeling of being homesick, you know, like always like your way. You're not spending time with the people that you want to invest real time with in terms of family, close friends, and stuff like this. So that's for sure one of my struggle. And another thing is that just the sacrifices, that's the hardest part. Like, I mean, if you want to succeed in any sports, especially being an expat, you're not from the place. You got to go there and you got to perform and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of the pressure of always prepping for the next X on the calendar. So what's next? Next Wednesday we play this team. So I'm basically like programming or preparing for this next event, and it's like a non-stop thing. And I think the hardest thing is that it takes a lot of sacrifice to do this. It takes a lot of energy, and also that's during the 10 years I spent in Europe, I was telling people that are from Marseille playing for a club how lucky they are. Talking to everybody that's from Budapest playing for FTC, it's for me, it's the best. I always wish that if Montreal would have a Champions League team at a high level, I would probably sign 10 years. And I think that's where
it gets even harder if you're not home. If you're a foreigner and you come as an expat, you have to adapt everything. But also, because you're in competition with all the other expats, the other foreigners, you got to deliver, you got to perform, and also, you know what I mean? Like, you got to fit into the team.
I always think, especially as like a Anglophobe, you know, like Aussies and Canadians, Americans, you know, when you go into Europe, it's such like a difficult place to establish yourself, because, you know, you're not part of that kind of Balkan like mafia almost, you know, you're an outsider and you've got to prove yourself from day one. And it's so intense. Do you have a favorite memory at any of those clubs? Do you have like a favorite club? I mean, was it when you were in Budapest with Fradi?
I mean, look, I appreciate all the clubs I've been to, all the groups of guys. I've been fortunate enough to go play in good clubs. A lot of my friends, Canadian friends or Americans or Aussie that went in Europe, but they had bad experiences in terms of just level or professionalism of the clubs that they went to. So I cannot say, like, I always been grateful for the opportunities that the clubs gave me. But one I like for sure, I think, was I kind of had two goals in my sporting career. First of all, was to go to the Olympics. It's still ongoing.
Yeah.
And then the other one was to win a Champions League medal. So I have three games. I played two times, one with Hug and one with Brescia for third place in the final eight. And then we lost. So I finished fourth twice. And then I finished second when we went in the final Champions League with Ferencváros. And to be honest, I have to be extremely thankful for Ferencváros that I was there the 2 years of COVID. It was not easy, especially coming from Canada, going to play in Hungary with all the things that were going on and blah, blah. And the club was literally amazing. Just having my back. Jolt Varga, probably one of the best coach I had in terms of human, big heart, pushing me to another level of my game. And so I have so many. Every time I, like, let's say now I'm thinking about your question, I'm going through all my career, and you know, I got flashbacks of really good things. And you know, one of my closest friend now, I met him and I played 2 years in Marseille with him, and he's an Aussie guy, and I met him again when I moved there in Sydney. So it's kind of a It's the relationship that I built throughout the years, and the main highlights of the sport, like scoring a big goal and an important moment. This is where it sticks, you know. And it's like, okay, it was worth it, because you have these feelings, you experience those really rare feelings that in a normal life you don't really get.
Yeah, sort of justifies all those hours that you put in and all those sacrifices that you mentioned. You said there your sort of sporting ambitions, obviously a Champions League medal. I assume you mean winner's medal, because obviously you have one with Fradi, a silver, but also the Olympics. Now that's obviously that's still on the cards. You know, that's not like completely unrealistic. And I sort of want to talk to you about that now in terms of the Canadian national team. There's obviously a really strong correlation between countries that have really good professional high performance leagues and their national teams. It's not hard one to get your head around. You've basically got to beat the USA and Brazil, and even Argentina now are sort of coming into the picture, maybe, as you know, they've still got a way to go, but it's not an easy thing to do to qualify for the Olympics. How optimistic are you about Canada's chances, if not this time, but going forward? Can you see a place where Canada can be the best team, the top team?
100%, and that's the beauty of it now. And this is why I'm still around, and this is why I keep pushing, because I feel that the Canadian Federation now were at a really good spot in terms of leadership, coaching, environment. I think our young core is not young anymore. A lot of players have more experiences. We have been playing for a lot of years together. And let's say the core of our team is like 25, 26. So they are coming to a maturity, and then they have some experience in Europe. And no, we believe,
especially following Pat Orton leadership, that, you know, I think there's really good things put in place for us. And then I'm extremely excited for Pan American Games. I'm extremely excited for Doha World Championship. And then also what the future holds, because, and that's one of the reasons why also I came back. You know, I had my personal goals in terms of my professional career. But then after, if I want to go to the Olympics, I got to give back to the Canadian Federation and working extremely hard with not only the present moment, but also to work with the youth and the pyramid of their federation. So I think now we have a good opportunity with our 2005-2006 that they have a good potential to become a good team. And then I want to be I want to invest myself also in the future of Water Polo Canada, because I feel pretty proud of where I'm coming from, the work I've done, but also I want to give back so much to the sport here, because they gave me the platform to go play in Europe and stuff. So
speaking of playing in Europe, I mean, America, the Team USA have been very sort of blunt and open about the fact that they just want all their players to go and play professionally in Europe. Would you encourage all of the Canadian national, senior national team, and anyone else in Canada to go and play in Europe? Would you say that that's probably the best thing for them?
Yeah, 100%. The thing is that it's not so much playing in Europe. The question is, can you put yourself in Europe in a good situation that's good for you? There's a lot of past experiences that we're sending athletes in Europe, but they're in bad environments. They're in low clubs that either they have money struggles, or they don't have ambition to actually like develop these players. So then after, if you're 22 here in Canada and you have a good potential and you're actually good and you want and you have the ambition, and you say, okay, I'm going to sacrifice all my life here to go in Europe, but then your first experience is trash, for sure you're like, okay, I bring back, and then after, what you're going to do? You're going to decide to go to work. So I think the best thing for sure is to go to Europe, but in a situation that it's really good for you. Or for example, us Canadians, we have basically all the world to go play, but the federation, we're trying to more like send our athletes to good environments so they can actually like reach their full potential. So if it's in Sydney, they have to go, because the one of the good clubs in Sydney that trains with the national team players and blah, 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 you can go there and it's a really good environment, go there. If it's NCAA, because the program of this CAA and this university, they're actually like really caring about their athletes, and it's a good environment for water polo, and there's some junior national team players there that are going to grow up. Okay, good, go there. And then, but for sure, Europe is still the main place to play. Like, if you play Champions League, Euro Cup in a club that has young and ambition and a really good coach, go and enjoy and learn and be a sponge and you know, do everything you want.
Just before we go into part two, you've sort of had a fairly long kind of spell in the senior national team. Is it in a better position now than it was maybe when you broke through? I know it's a difficult question for you to answer, but would you say the infrastructure and the team and their prospects is better now than that eighth place finish in 2009 in Rome?
You know, this is super hard, because it's kind of like, it's like these questions, like, am I better than let's say the center of Canada 10 years ago? It's so... These things are hard to compare, like teams and eras are hard to compare. And also it's a different sport now. Like it's with the new rules and everything, you know, some of us that kind of experienced ball water polo, we had to adapt in terms of how the sport changed. But I think we're back to a really solid level. I think it went 2008, 2009, then after it kind of floats a little bit, then after 2016, we had a drop.
Okay, there's a lot of players that quit. They played like it was domino. We literally had 10 players stopping that had a really high level. And then so we had to rebuild this. And then from 2016 to maybe now, it's where we build all these like 17, 18 real potential players. And now they're coming to a maturity that it's actually really good at the worldwide level. For example, we have Bogdan, our center, that signed in Jug now for 2 years, that which is amazing for him, but amazing for our federation. We have two guys in NCAA that are quite young, but been playing internationally for 6 years now because they had the opportunity to come to a team, have big responsibility when they were really young, and now they're showing up like great results in terms of Ruel, Jeremy Cote. We have a lot of guys playing in Europe, so it's kind of more balanced. And as a veteran, it's really nice to have young players that has experience, because a lot of players in Europe, they play let's say low level of their league, but they never get the international experience of playing high level against whatever Greece or the best of the best. But them, that's the opportunity that we have as Canadians, is that when we are young, because you make the national team when you're 18 or you make the national team at 21, that means you play, you're 21 and you play in front of Dennis Varga, Aaron Younger, you're like, oh, shit. But you, that's like huge opportunities to grow as a player playing against the tops.
We're going to go into part two now, where some people have sent in some questions. And we normally start off part two by asking our guests to give their total seven. So their dream team, their seven best players. You're smirking, so I assume that you've planned this, maybe. You've got some people in mind. So if you could maybe give us your best seven, maybe like people you've played with or against, your kind of dream team. If you had like a fancy league team, who would it be?
I mean, it's funny because you kind of want to go with your fans, right? A little bit. And then, but I would say for sure, as a defender, me that I played center, I understand that. I think Jakšić is the best center back. Him and Ivović, but for sure, I think, I would take Jakšić as a defender. I would take myself as a center. I would take Kevin Graham on the right side, Canadian lefty that had an amazing career and kind of inspired me to play in Europe all these years. I would take Shoma as a goalkeeper. I would play with Aaron Younger and Fontoulis on the left side. I would probably put, I think Zalinki is playing on top of the world now for the last 2-3 years on the right side. And then am I missing someone? I don't think so. The right side player.
No, that's it. Zalanki and Kevin Graham. Yep. And did you put yourself at centre forward?
Yeah, but you said...
But who
would play as a seven? I want to play. I don't want to watch. I want to play with them.
I'm really, really pleased that you've done that, because most people, like, I ask people to sort of do that, you know, build a team around themselves, but they sort of are always too... They're a bit coy about that, but I'm glad that you kind of back yourself and put yourself there. Obviously, you want to be part of the team, and it's an amazing team.
Yeah,
and lots of those players. I mean,
I really like. If I have to take another center, I think Perez. You know, I thought he was just the first time I saw him. I actually in 2009 I played in the pool in the quarterfinal against him, and I was just like, I know I was not even playing. I was just like watching. You know, I was watching him, and so it's
That's the worst thing, I think, when you're playing against someone that's just top quality. You become a bit of a bystander. Yeah, you become a statue, really, don't you?
My first game international at the senior level, like on the big stage, was Hungary in 2009. So I played against Madarash, Gabor Kish, Biros. You know, everybody was there, and I didn't know how to feel, really. It was like, I'm literally in the water with them. But and it's funny how, you know, time and, you know, now
Madarash was my director in
Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course. Yeah, that's a real baptism of fire, that, you know, Hungary, your first game. Okay. Someone did ask whether you're planning to play in Europe again, but we've sort of already covered that one. You sort of giving a non-committal, maybe not. We hope you do, but obviously I know that you're enjoying yourself at the moment. And in fact, you spoke about the coaching you were doing, and we do have a question here. I haven't written the name down, so apologies for the person that sent this in. But what does Nicholas think of the 04-05 Canadian generation that he's training and coaching? And the second part to that is, can you see yourself as a full-time coach going forward?
Okay, so the first part of the question, I think I said it before. I think we have a young core, maybe 5-6 players with a really good potential that I've been working now for a year with them. Actually, there's one of them that made the team this year and was in Japan. Mm-hmm. So in terms of building around these 5-6 players and creating a team, and one thing I like is that it's a really close group. So the friendship is installed, the camaraderie, whatever the...
Yeah.
This is, I think, a good opportunity for Canada to actually like push this generation for years to come. And then also coaching, I love giving back. Coaching, I never really experienced leading a coach, like a leading team as a coach. I think with all the experience I've gained throughout all the coaches I've been coached, I think I would be pretty good at it. And I want experience to see if I enjoy doing that. Yeah. So for sure, now when I'm on the side of the pool, I'm coaching, but it's more like training, coaching. And then we'll see if I like it. But so far, it's been amazing.
Yeah, good. Are you a good coach? I mean, if I had one of your players on now, would they be like, oh, he's the best of it we've ever had? Or would they be like, oh, he's still got a sort of a player mindset and he doesn't view things
but that's,
like that?
That's the hardest thing now in the situation where I'm at, is that I'm a kind of a player coach. So it's kind of we basically take the calendar and then the year calendar, and we say, okay, when I have to invest myself as a player 100%, and when I can have like maybe a personal training on my own and then coach more. Mm. So it's been quite of a new experience for me to kind of float through these phases. But I mean it's what I was looking for. It's not like going all in into playing. It was more like see other things and have a better balanced life. And it's been amazing to go back and forth with this, and I think their opinion of me as a coach would be pretty positive. I like to think so.
It'd be weird if you said anything else. But it's such a weird time, that sort of transition from player to coach, because you still think, oh, I'm still good enough to be playing. Obviously good enough to be playing, and you are playing, and then you think, am I actually splitting my time wisely? And also the dynamic, if you're playing in the senior national team with some guys you're coaching, is always an interesting...
But that's something that dynamic. We're really trying to avoid. Like there's one player that I consider myself like coaching him. The rest, you know, like most of the senior team are abroad. We send them away. They play either in good clubs in Europe, or they play in CAA, or even there we have 2-3 guys in the west of the country now training there, and they're decentralized, if we can say like this. And then so during the year, usually when it's a normal year, not the Olympic year, but when it's a normal year, the people I coach, it's pretty rare that I will be in the water playing with them. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree. You spoke earlier about a good time that you had in Australia when you were playing there. We've got a question here from an Instagram account called Detox Milk, and they ask, will you be returning to Australia to play? They also sort of two part that with, talk about the quality of the league, I'm quite interested on your take on the Australian league, because a similar model, as you sort of alluded to earlier, could be replicated in Canada. So you talk about the quality of that league and maybe how it can be sort of brought maybe over, that can be the model for Canada.
Yeah. So let's say now that I'm invested a little bit more in the Canadian Federation, I try to go back into all my experiences and to see how people are doing their leagues and how they think to grow the sports there, and try to get the things that I can probably bring back home. And then the thing is, I really enjoy in Australia. First of all, well, I'll answer the question is if I'll go back. Now, it's pretty clear that for now, I'm based in Montreal and my commitment will be short terms. So depending on the league, how it is, the league. But if the league can be only 2 months, maybe that's something that could be good for me to go back. The thing is, let's say I started to do some clinics. Let's say I went 2.5 weeks in Zimbabwe to give back to the water polo community there and to live an experience that was outside of playing water polo performance on demand. And I absolutely loved it. So I'm kind of open to all this. I don't know if a 5-month commitment to go back or a 6-month commitment to go back to Australia as possible at the moment. But no, I'm interested if there's shorter term opportunities out there.
So coaches in Australia, signal.
There's another thing I really, really admired from the Australian League. Well, I played in Sydney West, Magpies, when I was there. It's really linked with their national team. So if you're a national team athlete, you train in the morning with the national team. You go to institute like we have here, the Central Station. And then at night, it's kind of linked. The coach of the club and the coach of the national team, they work together. And then I really like that. And also I got invited to train with the national team coach, Elvis, at the time in the morning. So I kind of kept my physical fitness or level at a really high level when I was there. So that was really good. And then the league in itself, Australia, the league is really fast. They're really fast. It's a culture of work. I don't know if it's just like, but I think the entire league, all the teams could swim really well compared to here. You know, it's more friendly. It's not like optimal physical shape. You know, it's kind of something that. To find 2 or 3 clubs in Canada that can really, the national team can be linked with and work together and try to level up the level of the clubs and the national team at the same time, that's amazing. And also the community of water polo in Australia is remarkable. Everybody that stops playing water polo, they give back. Either if they're successful in their business, they're giving back financially, or they're giving athletes that are on the national team, they graduated, they're saying, okay, we'll give you opportunities for jobs while continue to play, and then it gives you a better transition. So I think the water polo community there, the ex-players being still involved in sports somehow, is it at the club level coaching or just financially or just like giving jobs to water polo players or just being in this community of exchanging experiences and motivating and supporting some clubs, It was amazing, and that's something that we can for sure learn from because I don't think that's the case right now in Canada like we want to. And I think we're changing a lot of things in terms of federation. So when you stop, you're kind of appreciative of your career with Water Polo Canada, so you want to give back. So we're working towards that as well.
Good. I've just completely butchered that name, but Bor Tanasijevic, I think that's has asked. Apologies, my Croatian's not that good. But what's your best memory with Team Canada?
Yeah, there's many, but one
is there. There must be one. Everyone always says
there must be one. I'm like, it's not. I'm thinking more about the brotherhood. I think my group, my generation, 1991 and from 2009 to 2016, it was a hell of a 7 years for me in terms of the friendship I built with this team. And we were so close. We had so much fun together. So it's just like I have so many memories. But in terms of playing, I think it was just like I have a good memory when we won the Pan American Games when I was on the junior team with my cousin. We beat United States in Miami, and it was it kind of gave me that push to say, okay, I want to live this feeling over and over and over and over. So yeah, just the feeling of winning, being totally exhausted, and then just the self-value after, and just like feeling extremely good about me and the team and celebrating together. So yeah, I think that would be one of my memory or emotions that I still go back to if I need some extra motivation and stuff.
Yeah, being America in America is obviously a big
one. That was on the junior level, you know. Now if somehow it happens, and don't get me wrong, it's still the goal number one is to beat America. So, but yeah, if it happens, I think that would definitely be the highlight of my career.
No offense to all our American listeners, but fingers crossed. As long as it's a good game, who knows? Maybe that will be the game that determines whether you can go to the Paris Olympics. But just one last question before we wrap up. Normally, we ask our guests to talk about themselves in a way that isn't related to water polo, and a lot of them tend to find that quite difficult, given how much time they devote to the sport. But what can you tell us about Nicholas Constantine Beccari outside the pool? What hobbies do you have? Can you have? What things do you enjoy doing to relax?
Okay, so basically, my brother, I'm really, really close to my family and friends. My people around me, I really care about them. So I'm spending a lot of time with them. And my brother is an artist, so we have an athlete and an artist in the family. So I really appreciate and love the street art of Montreal, the culture, the music, the music scene. And actually, I've been pretty lucky to have him around because I haven't been in Montreal for almost 12 years. And now every time he comes back, he brings me along to all these events and stuff. So that's for sure something that I'm exploring. By the way, his name is lebicard.com if you guys want to check it out.
Shameless plug. Shameless plug on this.
What he did. No, I'm joking. But yeah, so yeah, for sure, music, arts is a big thing now. Depending on the calendar, I go back skiing. I was skiing when I was young. So I go to the mountains here and I ski a bunch with my friends. Exploring a little bit of business opportunities left and right. I got a lot of friends that are entrepreneurs. And I'm actually like doing my transition as a coaching, but also exploring what I would like to do after. And maybe open either a coffee place / art gallery with my brother. That's something that's always in the back of my mind eventually. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I can tell you love your coffee. And if your brother can ever draw anything water polo related, I'm sure we'll happily post it and share it on our page. You said you wanted to maybe do something business wise. Did you just mean the coffee place, or is there maybe something more?
That's something I got my two best friends, they're involved into real estates, like flipping houses and stuff like this. Now the market in Montreal with exchange rates it's not the best. But that's one avenue that I kind of want to look into. And then my best friend's got some startups that I kind of want to maybe invest when I'll have more time. And I don't think I'll be able to sit in the office from 9 to 5. I don't think it's in my nature. I think I need more action. Like even now speaking, 50 minutes, I'm kind of getting shaky and want to move around. it's been a real blessing to have all these people around. Even if I left 12 years, I still have my circle here. They came to visit me every year I was abroad. So I'm really grateful for my best friends and my family that has supported me this journey.
Well, I know a hint when I hear one, so we will call it a day there. Nicholas, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really insightful, and everyone wishes you the best of luck for Pan Americans, the rest of your career, and whatever comes after.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for having me. Have a good one.